everyone. It's Pastor Jeremiah. Welcome to our online service this morning. Thanks for tuning in and joining with us as we continue our sermon series, Because I Said So, Trusting God When His Ways Are Not Our Ways. It's a series through the Ten Commandments. We've been in this series for a number of weeks. We took a quick break over the Easter weekend just to celebrate Easter and the resurrection, but now we're jumping back in. We have two more messages. This week, we'll cover the ninth commandment, which is, thou shalt not bear false witness. And then next week, we're going to deal with the issue of covetousness in the 10th commandment and the final message of this series. But this morning, I want to jump right in to our theme, which is false witness, bearing false witness, and to be more general about this commandment and to grasp, I think, a full understanding of the implications of the commandment is not to lie, not to practice deceit, either with ourselves or with others in our lives. So the exact commandment is worded this way in Exodus chapter 20, verse 16, you shall not give false testimony against your neighbor. Now, if you were asked to take the stand in a court of law in the United States of America, the judge would ask you to swear on a holy book, usually the Holy Bible, because that's what's relevant for most people, at least in this part of the world. And you would have to testify that what you were going to say was the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God. We've all heard, I think, that phrase over and over again on TV and in movies about cases in which the law is involved. So to violate the sworn oath is to undermine the entire justice system. And in so doing, one would perjure themselves, which is actually a criminal, you would be subjected to criminal charges if you did that. Because once again, we find this evidence that to bear false testimony is a pretty big deal. And so this foundation, this fundamental belief is one of the pillars of our society. It's one of the pillars of our justice system, to incentivize people to tell the truth and to penalize them when they do not tell the truth. And so the Ten Commandments has provided the foundational structure for the world that we inhabit today, which is important because one of the things that I've been rebutting again and again throughout this sermon series is this idea that the Ten Commandments are outdated, that they're antiquated, that were written for cultures of people that lived thousands of years ago, that we don't need to pay attention to what they say today. But no, actually, the opposite is true. They are still the foundation for our understanding of law and justice and codes of conduct and morality worldwide. However, like the other commandments that we've looked at in this sermon series, there's this erosion of trust in the importance of these commandments. And I think that we are tempted to believe that we've outgrown them or that they're no longer binding, that they're outdated, that they're old-fashioned. And so the tagline of this series is trusting God when his ways are not our ways, because in so many ways we have strayed from our beliefs in things like the Ten Commandments and other teachings in Scripture. We've strayed from those things. We've got to learn to come back to this place of trust. Trusting God, taking him for his word, believing that what he says is the truth, and aligning ourselves with it in light of the fact that, or in spite of the fact, I should say, that in so many ways our culture is steering us away from that. And so we're going to have to buck the trend. We're going to have to steer into uncomfortable conversations. And we're going to have to pursue the truth against a lot of pressure coming against us to deny it. We have to recommit ourselves to take these things seriously and to not stray from the teachings of scriptures. Unfortunately, in our culture today, we have a very unhealthy relationship when it comes to the truth. With the advent of postmodernism, we no longer believe the truth is discovered, that it's something that is divinely ordered and divinely revealed. What we believe instead is that truth can be manufactured. In a world in which we choose our own truth or manufacture our own truth, it would come to reason that there is no longer any working definition for a lie. What is a lie? If there's no truth, then there certainly cannot be a lie. And so our entire justice system then falls apart as a result of that. To make matters worse, there is a technological explanation for why we have become so susceptible to believing untruths, for deceiving ourselves and deceiving others in the process. We operate with a strong confirmation bias, social psychologists will say. And this bias comes to us and it causes us to be naturally inclined to believe things that we want to be true, rather than the merits of the truth of those things in and of themselves. And that has long been a corruption in the character of human beings. But now we have this thing called Google in the internet, which has caused it to become inflamed. And so let's say you're a maverick, you're a free thinker, and you like to go against the trend. And somebody suggests to you that the world is, or that the earth is flat. And there's something about that idea that just excites you, right? You want to believe the world is flat because you want to prove that everybody for so long has been absolutely wrong. And so you get on the Google and you search evidence for why the earth is flat. And guess what you'll find? You're gonna find hundreds of reputable websites that are laying out the case for why the earth is actually flat and we've been wrong for the last 50 to 100 years. They'll say, oh, the lunar landing was staged. They'll say governments have all these reasons, suspicious reasons as to why they are promoting this untruth in our world. They'll show you Photoshopped images of the earth and they'll say, it's all a sham. We're all being fooled, right? And you're going to find the evidence that confirms your predisposition to believe because of your confirmation bias, right? And so you're not going to get on Google and look at reasons why the flat earthers are wrong. If you want to believe that the earth is flat, you're going to look for evidence that confirms your bias. And very rarely do we have the ability to play the devil's advocate and look at the opposite side of the argument because of that confirmation bias that we are all dealing with. And so the temptation to lie is built within us. The temptation to be deceived is built within us. In fact, in order to understand maybe where this confirmation bias first originated, first materialized, we need to look no further than Genesis chapter 3, which is the story of Adam and Eve's fall. If we follow the law of first mention in the scriptures, which says that in order to understand a thing like lying or deceit, we look at the place where it's first mentioned, then Genesis chapter 3 is a great place to start. The serpent, in lying to Adam and Eve, laid the foundation for our understanding of how deception works and what it looks like. And the serpent, he doesn't offer an outright lie to Adam and Eve. The scriptures use this defining adjective for the serpent. They said he was crafty. The serpent was crafty. And so the serpent suggests, he says, did God really say that you would surely die as a result of eating the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil? And the serpent sows seeds of doubt in the minds of Adam and Eve. And these seeds of doubt, they grow into big, fat lies in which they deceive themselves over the course of time. And this deception is how innocent and harmless the lie appears at its inception point, right? When a lie begins to materialize, it seems harmless. It seems small. It's very subtle. And it's easy to believe. And we oftentimes fall into that trap. We fall into that trap over and over and over in our lives. Because lying begins in such a subtle way, I think we often confuse it with a harmless activity. We don't take it as seriously as we ought to. After all, if nobody finds out, nobody gets hurt. That's the logic, that's the morality, the rule of morality that we live by in our world today. And the reality is that lying has a snowball effect on our lives. We know this, right? We know this just, it's evidence-based. We look at it, we see the destruction of a person's life, and we could trace it back to some lie that they began to tell, some mistrust that was sowed in their relationships and caused all sorts of chaos as a result. But lies build. They build and build until they grow into something that it becomes a part of who we are. We become liars. There's a movie, in the movie Liar Liar, Jim Carrey plays a lawyer who has this chronic lying problem. And being a lawyer, it's a profession with a shaky relationship with the truth, let's say, right? A good lawyer oftentimes has the ability to very slickly turn a lie into a apparent truth or vice versa, right? Attorneys have this ability if they're successful, or at least the way that we perceive success in those who are attorneys. And I have some friends who are attorneys, no offense, right? But that's the way the world looks at that particular profession. So Jim Carrey's character has developed this addiction to lying. He's a liar. That's what he is. And so his son, on his birthday, he's promised his son that he's going to visit him for his birthday. He's going to be there for his birthday, and he doesn't show up. He's shown to be a liar. So his son wishes, before he blows out his birthday candles, that his father wouldn't be able to lie for 24 hours, and that's the plot of the film. And so Jim Carrey's life becomes a living hell as a result of his inability to lie. And that's, of course, a part of the whole comedic shtick that the movie goes for. And Jim Carrey comes to his son and he appeals to him, explaining to him why he needs to lie and why lying isn't such a big deal. And it actually reveals a great deal about the logic that we employ in order to convince ourselves that lying is okay. The justification that takes place in our own minds when we justify our uncomfortable and unhealthy relationship with lying. So let's show this clip and I'll jump in on the other side.
Now listen, Max, you gotta do something for me. I need you to take back that wish.
So you can lie?
Yes, but not to you. You see, Max, sometimes grown-ups need to lie. It's hard to explain, but if... Here's a good example. When your mommy was pregnant with you, she gained a good 40 pounds. There was nothing she wouldn't eat, and daddy was scared. But when she'd ask me, how do I look, I'd say, honey, you look great. You're beautiful. You're glowing. If I'd have told mommy she looked like a cow, it would have hurt her feelings. You understand?
My teacher tells me real beauty's on the inside.
That's just something ugly people say. Max, no one can survive in the adult world if they have to stick to the truth. I could lose my case, I could lose my promotion, I could even lose my job. Now I need your help, Max, okay? Okay, now do whatever you did last night, only this time, make it an unwish.
I did it.
Excellent!
It's time for the truth. You and I are chronic liars. And we want to believe that we're innocent of that accusation as human beings, but we are prone to protect ourselves at all costs, to protect our reputations at all costs. We will defend ourselves against all kinds of accusations. Somebody says, you're a jerk. You say, no, I'm not, even though you've been behaving like a jerk. We justify our poor performance. We say things like, well, I would perform better at my job if the workers around me were more competent, right? We make excuses. I haven't exercised, for instance, in a couple of weeks because I got out of the rhythm. I got out of the habit. I just took a trip to Kenya and it's no longer a part of my routine. And so I make all sorts of excuses as to why I've stopped exercising, when the bottom line is I just need to suck it up and have the discipline and exercise. We make more excuses. Well, I need an extra drink tonight because I've had a really, really stressful day and that will just cause me to relax. We have all sorts of subtle ways that we lie to ourselves. Last week, I left the house in a bad mood and I said some very rude things to my wife as I was leaving because I was impatient and I was frustrated. And she called me out on my rude behavior later in the day when I returned home. And I told the truth, at least in part. I told the truth. I said, "You're right. I was rude to you." But then I backtracked on that and told a very, very subtle lie. A lie, in fact, that was so convincing that I convinced myself that it was the truth up until the point that I was writing this sermon and the Holy Spirit fell on me and convicted me that actually what I had done was just a subtle form of lying. And what I did is a justification. This is a trick that we all employ in our lives. I justified my rudeness. My rude behavior was justified because I felt frustrated that she wasn't ready to leave that morning when it was time for us to leave. We both had an appointment. We had a meeting at the church. And so I was planning on us riding together. She wasn't ready. So instead, we had to ride separately. So I said, "Because you so rudely ruined my plans," right? I was frustrated. And so I took my frustration out on you and I behaved in a way that was rude. And of course, that's just a big fat excuse. It's a lie. It's a lie. That's not the reason why I was rude to her. I was rude to her simply because I was impatient. I was rude to her because I couldn't control my emotions in the moment. But I couldn't own any of those things. I had to make an excuse. I had to make a justification, which in the end was a lie. If I was able to be completely honest, I would just own the fact that I behaved rudely and I would seek forgiveness and I would move on and try to do better. But here's the problem with lying. It has massive implications in our lives. We aren't given all the reasons why we shouldn't lie in a convenient list as a result of God laying out this commandment, the ninth commandment in Exodus chapter 20. But the reasons are not that hard to quantify. In fact, we see them in so many other examples throughout the scriptures. This destructiveness of deceit, of lying, and false testimony. There's so many stories throughout the scriptures. And I'll point them out as we move along. There's one story in particular that I think bears relevance to the impact, the destructive impact that lying can have on all of our lives. And that's the story of Jacob. It's found in Genesis. Jacob, who's one of the patriarchs, he's the son of Isaac. And Jacob is born, and at the beginning of his life, he's born as a twin with his brother Esau. And he comes out of the womb grabbing onto his brother's heel. And so his name, Jacob, literally means heel grabber. And the implications are that for Jacob's entire life, he would struggle to get ahead. He would struggle and he would connive and he would scheme to be able to get ahead, and that's exactly what his identity becomes. And so we find that together in cahoots with his mother, who he was his mother's favorite, he schemed to steal the blessing of his father that was to go to Esau. He previously had deceived Esau into taking his inheritance from him. And so Esau was hungry, he was famished. Jacob conveniently had cooked a pot of stew right at the end of Esau's long hunting day. And Esau, he gave up his birthright, which was a mistake in and of itself. Maybe you could say that Esau's sin was his impulsiveness. And Jacob deceived his brother, tricked him out of that through using that tactic of Esau's hunger. And then, of course, deceived his brother and deceived his father by stealing Esau's blessing in addition to that. And because of that, he had to flee. He had to flee from his family and go to live with his uncle Laban, where his mother had grown up. And his life took on a whole new trajectory, a whole new course, in which there were a lot of implications, a lot of consequences as a result of the choices that he had made when he was young. So here are the five repercussions of lying, and I want to weave in some of the consequences of Jacob's life to illustrate some of the impacts that lying can have on our lives throughout the course of our lives. And even though God can redeem things, and even though God can heal us, there still are costs as a result of lies that we tell and behaviors that we engage in. So first of all, lying can produce a loss of trust. A loss of trust. When people catch you lying, they start to doubt everything that you say. And it can damage the trust that exists between you and others that you're in a relationship with. Rebuilding trust can be incredibly challenging. It could take a great deal of time to restore trust in a relationship for a person who has cheated, for a person who has betrayed, for a person who has lied. It's very difficult to enter back into a trusting, intimate relationship with that person. That was the story for Jacob after he deceived his brother, deceived his father and his brother. He had to flee and live with his uncle Laban, where he had difficulty establishing trust with his uncle. Perhaps it was his uncle who had picked up on the fact that Jacob was a trickster, and so he played some tricks on him. And Jacob was the victim. He didn't get to marry Rachel when he thought that he was working 7 years to marry Rachel. He had to marry her older sister instead, and Laban tricked him into that. Laban tricked him into all sorts of things as a result of his crookedness. And Laban struggled as well with that, in losing his family, in losing Jacob and his daughters as they fled Laban's household because he could no longer be trusted. And so there was all sorts of trust issues in Jacob's life and throughout the course of Jacob's life as a result of a loss of trust because his character couldn't be trusted. So that's the first thing. The first repercussion of lying is loss of trust. The second thing is guilt and stress. Lying can cause feelings of guilt and anxiety. Lying creates this constant state of worry. Worry over the fact that we might get found out. We might get caught. And that can lead to increased stress and anxiety levels. So Jacob flees Laban in the middle of the night. Laban chases after him, and Jacob is in fear for his life and the life and safety of his family. He doesn't know what Laban is going to do to him. There's a stress, anxiety that comes with that kind of an experience. As Jacob is returning home, back to his homeland, his brother Esau is coming to greet him. He doesn't know that his brother's coming in a friendly manner. He believes that his brother is going to seek retribution. So he has to separate his family and himself. He realizes that he's put his family in danger. And he's stressed and anxious the entire night as a result of lying, as a result of the guilt and stress that results from lying. For some of us, we have such a bad relationship with the truth that we suffer from chronic guilt, stress, and anxiety. And it's not a chemical imbalance. And it's not something a pill is going to solve. It has to do with the fact that we lie. And we need to develop a healthy relationship with the truth in order for the truth to set us free from the anxiety and stress that we feel as a result of lying. The third thing, third repercussion of lying is damage to our relationships. And this one seems almost so obvious, it may not even need to be pointed out, but lying can cause significant damage to relationships. When someone finds out that you have lied to them, they feel hurt, they feel betrayed, and it may damage the relationship irreparably. Jacob, he repeatedly deceived his family members, and he had to flee. He was never able to see his father or his mother again because of his lying. It was a damage of a relationship that lasted throughout the course of his parents' life. And the truth of the matter is that when we lie, we think of it as a small risk. But in fact, to be caught, to be found out in a lie, oftentimes has a massive consequence. And so we may lie for something trivial, something that is not even important, and yet it incurs a massive risk on the other side of that lie being exposed for what it was. It's not worth the risk. Fourth repercussion of lying is loss of respect. Lying can lead to a loss of respect from others. People who lie, we often view them as unreliable, as untrustworthy, as people with poor character. And this rings true in Jacob's life as well. Above and beyond any of the other patriarchs, Jacob's life is filled with people who disrespect him, especially his children. His children repeatedly disrespected him. His sons lied to him about his son Joseph, basically kidnapped Joseph away from the family, lied to him about him being being killed by a ferocious animal when in fact they had sold him into slavery in Egypt. One of Jacob's sons slept with one of his wives. There was all sorts of backbiting and deceit happening in his home as a result of the conflict that resulted from having two women in his life and two families in his life. It was a regular Jerry Springer episode of family dysfunction. Jacob was completely disrespected throughout the course of his life, likely as a result of his unhealthy relationship with the truth, his addiction to lying. And then lastly, the repercussions of lying are just consequences. The consequences. Lying can have huge consequences that affect not just you, but affect the lives of people all around you. Getting caught lying can lead to losing your job. It can lead to damaging your reputation. It can lead to all sorts of legal problems and trouble. Even though God redeemed Jacob's mistakes throughout the course of his life, his entire existence was plagued with all sorts of misfortunes that may have been avoided if he had simply told the truth. Losing his son Joseph, having two wives in the first place, his dysfunctional family relationships, all of these things stemmed from his inability to tell the truth. Jesus explains why lying can carry with it such massive consequences in our lives. He says in John chapter 8, verse 44, "You belong to your father, the devil, and you want to carry out your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning, not holding to the truth, for there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his native language, for he is a liar and the father of lies." You see, lying is not harmless, like we are often deceived to believe. It's a tactic of the enemy to harm our relationships, to damage our reputations, to sabotage our success, to impair our integrity, and ultimately to separate us from a relationship with God. Because the enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy. Conversely, in the same chapter, Jesus explains his mission and his purpose for all of our lives. In John chapter 8, verse 31, he says, "To the Jews who had believed in him, Jesus said, 'If you hold to my teaching,'" aka my commandments, "'you are really my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free.'" The objective of Jesus Christ is to set us free. When we look at things like the Ten Commandments, we ask questions like, what are all the rules for? The goal of Christ is to set us free. When we abide by his teachings, forbidding us from lying, we are given as a gift freedom as a result of that. Freedom from death. Freedom from sin. Freedom from our own devices. I want to invite you to pray a prayer of commitment, to let your yes be yes and your no be no, to rebuke the temptation to lie over your life. If you're willing to do that, I have a prayer written this morning that I would like you to repeat with me. And so if you would just bow your head and close your eyes, just repeat each line as I say this prayer over all of our lives. Jesus, set me free from the deceitfulness of my sin. Teach me to walk in the light as you are in the light. I will speak the truth at all times. I reject the lies of the enemy. Protect me from the lies others would speak over me. Help me to trust that you will defend me. I desire to know the truth. Let the truth set me free. Amen. Amen. I want to thank you for joining us this morning as we continue this series. As I mentioned in the beginning, we have one more week left before we close this series off. So looking forward to that. We're going to be talking about covetousness next week. You definitely want to join us for that. I want to remind you to be faithful in your giving to the work that God is doing through our church. You can give at westsidechurch.com/give, also through the church application, the Westside Church app. You can set up an account there, and it's easy and convenient to give that way as well. You can search Westside Church Seattle in the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store, and you'll find that application available. Well, God bless everyone. I hope you have a wonderful week. Hope this message was encouraging and inspiring to you, and that God really uses it to produce fruit, the fruit of truthfulness in your life. God bless. Have a great week. We'll see you next time.